Welcome, my friends, to the Tomb of Ideas, a Marvel horror podcast. I am the tomb's proprietor, Headstone P. Gravely. And here are your two captive hosts, Trey Lawson and James Hickson.
Welcome back to Tomb of Ideas. My name is James Hickson.
And I'm Trey Lawson.
And I'm special guest Thomas Malick. I have traveled many podcasts to get here from my own doomed show, The Secret Stacks, your comics and libraries podcast.
This is actually our good friend Thomas. He has decided to join us for a very special episode.
That's right.
It is something I never thought I'd see. It's time for MCU Werewolf by Night.
Yeah, an actual honest-to-goodness Marvel Monsters, basically feature-length special.
Yeah, basically feature. It's just under an hour, but according to the Academy,
yep,
it counts.
It's just as feature-length as some of the later Universal Monster movies.
And it is in black and white, which makes it 50% more eligible for an Oscar.
Hey. If it was silent, it'd be a sure thing.
So, Thomas, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Thomas. I'm a teen services librarian who reviews graphic novels all over the internet, including for School Library Journal, Kirkus, No Flying, No Tights. I've spoken at several different conventions about manga and comics and programming in libraries and pop culture, and almost like a death knell from Krypton. I was co-host of the Secret Stacks podcast for 72 episodes.
Oh, dear.
And I have left now to warn you that it is your 72nd episode. Anything can happen.
Is this like The Ring or something, where the curse is being passed on through the recording?
If we don't release the episode, does this... Wait, crap. Sorry.
Or do we need to guest on someone else's show and fast?
Or is it like The Ring 2, and you have to drown someone else in a bathtub?
Trey, fill the tub. Anyway, yeah, so we are going to be talking about the Werewolf by Night special, which we haven't actually watched yet.
Yeah. In fact, obviously, listeners will know our experience with Werewolf by Night because you've been listening to it. But, Thomas, what are your feelings, thoughts about Werewolf by Night as a character, a concept?
Well, the concept for this movie, I remember when the trailer came out, and I do remember it looked very different from a lot of other MCU productions we've seen. It had a lot of intrigue to it. They didn't really give up the whole plot, it didn't seem like. And so it seems very unpredictable to me. I just know a lot of these colorful characters are going to come together in black and white. And that it seems like there might be something a little comedic or... maybe a bit of a curveball stylistically, but then they're also, you know, they're going to play with light and shadow and really hopefully give us a very memorable take on werewolves.
Yeah. Have you read any comics with Werewolf by Night, or are you going in fairly cold as far as that character?
I feel like he's cameoed in some Marvel stuff I've read, but as a werewolf. So I'm not tracking anything terribly unique.
He's not really had a solo book ongoing for a long time.
And in fact, the most recent Werewolf by Night solo book isn't even Jack Russell.
Right, different character. That book was co-written by Taboo of the Black Eyed Peas, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But before that, I think there was a Marvel Max miniseries, maybe. That might have been the last Jack Russell solo book.
Yeah. So, we don't know a lot of what to expect from this special. It's interesting as a special.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a series, it's not a movie.
And I've heard rumors that Marvel is considering some of the things that were previously announced as series, like turning them into feature-length specials like this, instead of a series.
That is interesting. And of course, a little bit of Hellstrom Watch for a second here.
Right.
Armor Wars, which previously was going to be a Disney Plus series, has of course been transitioned to a movie now.
Right.
So that will be interesting. And I'm wondering what the motivation on that. I wonder if they are worried about, like, say, Marvel fatigue, or...
I do think that might be part of it, because if you think about the last couple of years, since these series started launching on Disney+, like, usually don't go more than maybe a month without something Marvel coming out. You know, mm-hmm. One series ends, you have a week or two, and then another series starts.
Yeah, I mean, I've really been enjoying She-Hulk.
Me
which
too.
The most recent episode we saw. Have you been updated on She-Hulk?
I've watched some of the episodes.
Okay.
Ooh, we watched...
I'm not completely caught up. I'm aware of a certain costumed friend who
sure.
appears.
Okay. So it will not surprise you to find out that Henry Cavill's Superman appears in...
Right.
Well, wait, were you saying Henry Cavill's body double appears? He's a handsome man.
No, of course, we're talking about Charlie Cox appearing as Daredevil, the Man Without Fear.
Wait, we are? I thought we were talking about Leapfrog.
Oh yeah, you didn't watch past the first 5 minutes.
His name is Batroc.
Abort! But, no, it's, you know, I haven't been enjoying the Marvel output. I definitely don't think it is going downhill like a lot of people claim it is, and... But I am really excited for this special. Now, it's directed by a first-time director. Yeah. Usually, he's a composer.
Michael Giacchino, who did the scores for Speed Racer, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek in 2009, The Incredibles. He's done a bunch of stuff for Disney Parks, I think. I think James is pulling up a...
Did he do the Batman?
Did he do... I think he did the most recent, the Robert Pattinson.
Batman,
the
yes.
Batman, yes. A definite article, The Batman.
So even though he is a first-time director, he's done a lot of things we love a lot. Like, some of the music you just mentioned is iconic.
Right.
I cannot tell you how many times I hummed the music from the monorail. It's just... if you were ending your journey with us today...
And he also, this is just occurring to me, but he did the score for the first Doctor Strange, which... I think has one of the better themes as far as the solo Marvel movies go.
Yeah. I agree. But, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, he gets tapped for this, never directed anything before. It'll be interesting to see how he does. Now, of course, Disney is not a stranger to tapping first-time directors for, especially like Halloween stuff, because of course last year's Muppets Haunted Mansion
right.
special was... directed by the punk rocker from Star Trek IV.
Yes. Really, you go back to the 80s, and Tim Burton was a first-time director for Disney, you know? Yeah. He did shorts like Vincent and Frankenweenie and stuff like that. So,
Thomas, did you know this? That the guy who directed the Muppets Haunted Mansion special is the punk rocker from Star Trek IV who Spock nerve pinches?
I had no idea.
You don't know what we're talking about, though, right?
Yes.
The scene where, like, the boombox, and yeah.
And everyone on the bus applauds.
Yes.
Yeah, he directed...
This has big John Cryer energy of him being Lex's nephew or something, right?
Right.
Super like movie, and then he gets older and becomes Lex Luthor.
My understanding is I think he actually was also part of the crew for that movie, and so he did...
Yeah.
He was developing a production background... But they needed a punk rocker, and so he stepped in.
Yeah, he actually wrote that song as well. Insert audio here. So Werewolf by Night. I don't want to look up too much about this, because I don't want to be spoiled for me. But...
Right. I know they released another trailer just this week. I have not watched it.
Oh, neither have I. I didn't even know there was a new trailer.
Yeah, I think right before it dropped, like within the last couple days.
Okay.
But I didn't watch it. I have heard that the werewolf effects are practical.
Ooh.
That it's not all CGI, which that's exciting. I am very much a proponent of werewolf effects being practical, not CGI. The best werewolf movies have practical werewolf makeup and prosthetics and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Much like with Black Panther 2, I don't need a second trailer. I am sold on the concept.
So I think we're actually going to talk more about the actors and other things like that afterwards. I'm just really excited to watch this.
Yeah, and I think we'll have more to say once we've seen their performances.
Yeah, because I've heard good things about the special. See Robert Cargill, one of the co-hosts, of course, of
Junk Food Cinema. Co-writer of Doctor Strange.
Yep. Little movie I like a lot called Sinister.
Yep. The Black Phone.
Oh, I watched The Black Phone this week.
Yeah,
good stuff. It's so good.
It is?
Oh,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, all right, then I'll
watch The Black Phone.
It is... The trailer is very middle of the road. I'm like, is this secretly a great horror movie or is this garbage? I can't tell.
Good. It's good. It's a great horror movie. It's an intense horror film.
All right.
Have you seen Sinister?
Yes.
It's intense like Sinister is. Okay. Just, like, go in prepared.
But yes, podcaster and writer C. Robert Cargill gave us a junk food pairing
for
this.
He has recommended that we eat moon pies.
Because werewolves.
Werewolves. So we are going to be eating moon pies. But Trey, you've also got us an assortment of treats here.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Cheetos Bag of Bones. We've got Fruit Brute.
Because werewolf.
Yeah. We've got Monster Mash. We've got Cheetos Paws. Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah, wow. Okay. We've got Halloween cookies. And, of course, we have the official soft drink of werewolves, Dr. Pepper. Mine is coming with a little bit of pregame rum because life is hard. So,
shall we take a break?
Yeah.
Well, they're going to take a break. Listeners, yes. You're going to get a short commercial break. We're going to go watch a movie.
Yeah.
Woo! We're going to go throw some red meat steak to our caged werewolf inheritors.
Right.
We'll be right back.
Fruit! Quiet! Fruit!
I'm me, Fruit Brute, with my fruit-flavored cereal, Fruit Brute, part of your nutritious breakfast.
True on you!
But delicious Fruit Brute has fruit-flavored marshmallows for the howling good taste of fruit.
Count Chocula's got chocolate marshmallows.
Frank and Betty's got strawberry-flavored marshmallows.
Fruit!
Fruit Brute, with a howling good taste of fruit.
Nobody plays monsters.
Boo! Pandro S. Harwood here, the inventor of Monster Vision, a process that delivers the chills you want in a scary movie. Hollywood ridiculed and snubbed me, so I'm taking over this network on the 29th and 30th. Thanks to me, you're going to witness two nights of Monster Vision the way it was meant to be seen. All night, scream till you drop.
It's a Moon Pie New Year. Join us at 11:30 on New Year's Eve live from Mobile, Alabama, and ring in the new year with the Commodores. That's right, the Commodores. With your hosts, J.J. Pruitt, Devin Walsh, Megan Gray, and Sally Pitts. Take in the sights and sounds of this unique Southern experience and welcome 2013 as the Moon Pie drops. It's a Moon Pie New Year, New Year's Eve, only on WKRG News 5.
Well then, that was good.
It was fun. It was surprising. I didn't know what to expect because I think we talked about how we'd all sort of avoided too much information about it.
No, I in fact kind of avoided as much information as possible about it.
It zipped by. It felt very portable, if that's the right word. It didn't feel like it was connected to a whole lot of lore or. Y'all had some heads ups about, like, oh, what if it's connected to Moon Knight or something like that?
Now, I think that we'll kind of talk about that right there. This could have easily had another 30 minutes on it.
But I'm kind of glad it didn't.
Oh, no, it's tight.
Yeah, I think if they're going to do these specials, this is sort of a good running time.
Yeah.
You don't want a big, long 3-hour thing, and you don't really want something that feels episodic. Like, you want something that like an old Universal or Hammer monster movie, gets in and out in, you know, 60 minutes, 70 minutes.
I just feel like, you know, I could have done with, like, a little bit of time. Like, you want to cut off at, like, 72 minutes? I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm.
It was so nice that I wanted more of it.
I'm glad that we didn't get a monologue for every single character and
right.
their backstory. They can look cool. Some of them do a couple cool things. And that's it. I like your description, tight.
Yes.
How it ran. It was a tight story.
The thing I was thinking was if this had been like a theatrical release, as they went around the room saying how many kills each person had, there would have been an extended 5 to 10 minute sequence showing them killing some monsters with a little bit more of their backstory. And frankly, we didn't need it.
And we couldn't have done that with Jack Russell's character.
Right. Right.
By the way, you notice he wasn't called Jack Russell.
They just call him Jack.
He's just called Jack.
Yeah.
I guess they figured they couldn't push that joke.
Right. I didn't look at the credits. I don't know if he's Jack Russell in the credits.
No, but Thomas...
And then I was completely misled by my pop culture experience because he had, like, that Day of the Dead markings on his face. I thought, oh, he's Jack Skellington. That's a cute little nod, I guess.
But, like, there was a part, and we were talking about it, and you're like, wait, Moon Knight's name is actually Jack Russell. Like, yeah, it's definitely Jack Russell.
Another thing I really appreciated is that this special movie, whatever you want to call it, is nobody's origin story.
No.
Everybody already had pre-existing history that we did not have to have retold to us. You could just sort of accept these are characters that exist.
Except maybe Elsa. It's kind of a... It's
the story... I mean, I guess we're spoiling things, right?
Yeah. Hey guys, if you've not watched it yet...
Let's bring down the spoiler gate.
Oh, spoiler gate.
Well, let me stand clear for a second. I won't get hit by it.
Right, right.
Please, everybody, put on a hard hat.
Yep. Okay, yeah, so this is definitely the origin of Elsa becoming heir to the Bloodstone artifact.
Yeah.
But even that, she's existed as a part of this monster-hunting family, and... She's the one we get the most backstory of, that she clearly ran away from home or left the family at some point and is now sort of the prodigal child.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's sort of the closest to an origin that we get. But even that, as a viewer, you have to fill in some gaps for yourself.
Yeah.
I do like the MCU tradition of, I guess MCU Lucha Libre tradition, that all women can Hurricane Rana anyone of any size and it will be effective.
Yes.
Is that the scissor thing that Black Widow does?
Black Widow
does. Okay, yeah.
Very, like, Lucha Libre style sort of thing.
So, actress's name is Laura Donnelly.
Mm-hmm.
And, yes, by the way, to answer your earlier question, Jack Russell is the name given in the credits.
Good.
So, there's that. But, you know, she definitely, as we talked about... She's different from the Elsa Bloodstone that I've read in the comic books.
Sure. Well, the Elsa Bloodstone in the comics has been fairly inconsistent in characterization depending on what writer has taken over.
She's also a redhead.
Yes.
In the comics.
Yes.
And not here.
Right.
No, I think you said at one point that you were thinking, like, the Bloodstone would turn her hair red.
Yeah, because red color pops up against the black and white, and it's like, oh, okay, this could be a clever way to show... As going to that origin comment, oh, here's where she became the supernatural hunter through these events.
And we'll talk about the black and white later, because I definitely want to talk about the black and white. But I really like the cast here. No one's like a big, huge name.
No.
In fact, the actor that really stood out to me was not even really an actor, Kirk Thatcher.
Yep.
Who, you know, we talked in the pre... the pre-watch of the film thing, we mentioned him unintentionally. We talked about Star Trek IV. He's the punk rock dude from the bus from Star Trek IV who gets neck pinched by Spock. And, of course, he directed the Muppet Haunted Mansion movie.
And here he's Joven, one of the monster hunters.
Yes. And I guess, like, subconsciously I knew he was in this, but I didn't remember until we watched it.
Right. Seems like he's one of those guys that just now is in the Disney ecosystem.
Yes. So,
let me ask you all this. How did you feel about the maze as a setting? Because we're outside the maze, we're setting up the intrigue, and then they enter. What did you all think once they were in there?
Oh, I want to visit on Avengers Campus.
Okay.
a couple thoughts. The first was, it immediately reminded me of the... 1990s Addams Family movies, like that kind of when they would go play in the graveyard behind the house kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
The other was, it was a great update of the old fashioned universal horror economy of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
That you can have some bits of stonework and some bits of foliage, and you shoot it, you get your shot, you rearrange it a little bit, and now you've got a different setting for a different shot. Because the way that maze was laid out, it all looked just the same enough from section to section that they could rearrange the same three or four set pieces over and over again for a bunch of different scenes.
In fact, I wouldn't have been surprised if we'd gotten like a scene where we see the maze actually shifting.
Sure.
And we find out the maze is alive.
But that's the thing that you, like, if you listen to commentaries for, like, The Wolfman, they'll talk about how the forest scenes for the Wolfman, they'd set up the trees for one shot. This was all shot on studio lot.
We're talking the original, right?
Yes, okay. The Lon Chaney. They'd set up their trees, they'd get a shot, and then for a different part of the forest, they just rearrange the trees. You know, they'd just sort of shift what was in the foreground to the background and move things around a little bit. You've got a totally different shot without having to have any new scenery.
And there's definitely that classic Universal Monsters vibe.
Mm-hmm.
For example, like we're saying, most of the film is in black and white, which is kind of a bold move.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the advantages of being this short little special. You could take that quote-unquote risk
mm-hmm.
of doing it in black and white, which, you know, part of the nice thing about black and white is when we do get color, like the Bloodstone accentuated, it really pops.
Yeah. Anyway. Also, the black and white allowed them to maintain, it was what, TV-14?
Yeah.
Because the gore is black and white.
Yes.
Because the way TV and film ratings work is you get a harsher rating if the blood is red.
Yes. See Evil Dead 2.
Yes. Or the first Hellboy movie.
Oh, yeah.
Also, grievous head injuries are rating, but through some of the violence you see in the third act, you can simply tug on someone's neck or right. rip open a different part of someone's body, not an R rating.
Right, right. Yes.
And, you know, that transition from black and white to color was very nice.
Yeah, the ending the movie with sort of color bleeding back into the world of the movie. It's been done before. It's not yes. exactly an original idea, but I thought it was a nice sort of way of easing us out of the horror of the special.
And I'm really surprised that they did it so close to the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it blows my mind that this is considered a risk, but it is a risk in modern filmmaking. The idea that something in black and white isn't going to get an audience and things like that. Because, like, people have had to fight to get their films made in black and white.
Sure.
We all know
I mean, you say that, but I regularly teach students who are vocally resistant to anything that looks like it was made before they were born.
Oh, I know. I've tried to show students Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and I've got pushback on it.
Sure. Yes.
Like,
in fact, I'm screening High Noon next week, and I have a feeling it may not go well with all of them. But
yeah, like, you always want to make sure when you're screening something for a student, you get the highest quality transfers possible.
Sure.
Like, I was thinking about it earlier this week when I was watching The Thing for 31 Days of Horror. Like, the transfer for The Thing for 31 Days of Horror that I watch is amazing. You cannot tell that movie was made 40 years ago.
Yeah, I think it got a Blu-ray release not too long ago. So that it may have gotten a recent transfer. But in terms of Werewolf by Night, the thing that we should probably talk about is that Jack Russell is not the only high-profile monster that we're familiar with who shows up in this special.
No. In fact, we get somebody who looks a lot like Simon Garth, the living the zombie. But, of course, he isn't Simon Garth, we find out.
Right, right.
Oh, that's not who you were talking
about? No, that wasn't quite what I was going for. I leaned into the word thing a little bit to try and nudge the conversation in a certain direction.
Oh, you want to talk about John Carpenter's The Thing more?
So, we've got a character named Ted.
Oh! Yeah, okay. Yeah, guys, Man-Thing's in this.
Yeah, he was in the first trailer, like the teaser trailer. So it's not a spoiler, but Man-Thing's real cool.
Yeah, Man-Thing. Oh, Thomas, did you watch the trailer for this before you watched
it? I saw the first trailer.
Okay. Where there was that one brief glimpse of Man-Thing's face for a split second.
I totally forgot that. Okay. So that was a neat surprise for me.
Good.
And the movie treats it as very matter of fact. Like, yeah. Oh, hi there.
Yes. He just pops his head.
So, nice to see you.
Here's the thing. The point I wish to make is, I don't know how you feel about this, but the reinterpretation of Man-Thing for the MCU, isn't he kind of the Marvel Monsters version of Groot?
Yeah.
Like, the way that Jack can communicate with him.
And he does a little shrug.
Yeah, he has personality. He's not the mindless, shambling sort of instrument of rage that he is in at least the early comics we've read.
Well, he's a creature who can wield these natural forces with brutish strength, but an 8-foot wall is just too much and completely contains
him. Well, okay, so my take on that is that, and it's never explicitly said, but it's plausible that Ulysses Bloodstone had maybe put some sort of magical fortification into the walls to trap Man-Thing in there.
Okay.
Also, it's worth noting that the big displays of power we see are against organic material. Simply people. And I'm not sure if you're how familiar you are with Man-Thing, but the whole thing about Man-Thing is those who know fear burn at the touch.
I was very pleased that they stuck with that.
Yes. Yeah, the burning touch looked so cool.
Yeah, they don't like straight out say it, but you'll notice everybody who gets burned the fuck out by Man-Thing is terrified when it happens.
Sure, yes.
And I think the amount they get burned is actually proportional to the fear they feel.
That seems right.
Because, like, the stepmother at the end...
Oh, she just erupts.
Yeah, she's like... She's ash, basically.
Yeah.
We're one step closer to the Howard the Duck feature.
Yeah.
Because Man-Thing can help teleport him to our world, possibly. And he's like, what? There are no superheroes here.
Well, Howard the Duck, he's already hanging out in Guardians of the Galaxy land. He's...
Well, and he fought Thanos. He was there.
Right. So it's a matter of time before those two, like, cross paths. In fact, I am waiting for him to set up shop in the office next door to She-Hulk or something.
Oh, that would be amazing, too.
In the comics, that was a thing for a while.
They were office neighbors. He would always just be annoyed that all these heroes were coming and going.
It was when Chip Zdarsky was writing Howard, and I forget who was writing She-Hulk
at the time. Was it Charles Soule?
Probably. And they would do these, like, one-page crossovers or whatever where he would be annoyed or she would show up in his book or things like that.
What do you think the budget of this was?
Not super high.
No.
They get away with a lot because of the black and white. Some of the CGI is...
Yeah.
A little... And I think part
the CGI
of it,
spiders on the...
Yeah, the bus.
Yeah. Or whatever
that was. And... Specifically, Man-Thing's eyes. That's the part of him that looked the most digital. His body usually looked fine, but it was something about his eyes that always looked a little bit Uncanny Valley.
In fact, I actually think Man-Thing looked better in color.
He did, yes.
Than the black light. I'm wondering, was the Man-Thing we saw at the end the result of practical effects?
Or some combination.
Yeah, is he like a puppet, basically?
Another thing that sometimes happens with digital effects is it is very hard to render something digitally in the same shot as someone live action and have it look realistic.
Yes.
And I feel like a lot of the shots of Man-Thing that are in black and white, the ones that are most notably CGI, are... very close up and usually have some part of another human being in the shot too.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if something about the closeness and the presence of another real person had an effect on that.
So, you know, we're talking a lot about Man-Thing. Let's talk about the Werewolf by Night. What did we think of actor Gael Garcia Bernal, I think I'm saying that name right, is as Jack Russell?
He's definitely not the comics character.
No, he actually thinks things through at certain points.
But he's still a little bit of a dumbass.
Yes. There's a scene where he's supposed to, like, plant an explosive.
Right.
And he just keeps on chucking it at a wall with a huge freaking crack that you could easily wedge an explosive into.
Right.
I loved after his transformation... that universal horror, y'all made that comparison earlier, they kept zooming in on werewolf face.
Yes.
Just really imprinting on us, this is a different person, he will be dealing with this situation differently than if he were human now.
Yeah, like, and to Jack's credit, he definitely has more control than Jack Russell in the comics does.
At least at the point we're at.
Yeah, the point we're at. We're just getting to the point where Jack can kind of control... his wolf form.
Or at least has his own inner monologue as the wolf is doing stuff.
Yes. And isn't just blacking out and waking up like, oh god, what have I done?
Right. I liked the makeup effects. I thought that they were definitely kind of a throwback thing, sort of deliberately old school.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was good and important that so much of his face still showed through.
Yes.
Because that's the thing that you usually lose with, especially CGI werewolves, is the connection to the human character.
And I think one of the choices they made for Jack Russell here is that he is wearing this makeup through his entire appearance, that he talks about honoring his ancestors. So this is definitely not just the white, possibly Irish ancestry. Right.
Like blonde hair, blue eyed.
Yeah, or red hair, ginger, kind of strawberry blonde Jack Russell you see in the comics.
Yeah.
He definitely has some POC ancestry.
Right. It seems like they've combined him with the other Werewolf by Night, which we mentioned in our intro, the new version of the character, whose name is Jake Gomez. And he is of Latino and Native American ancestry. And so I feel like we're getting a little bit of that version of the Werewolf by Night, too.
Yeah, and I'm actually really okay with that. Like, you know, if they go with the traditional origin for Jack Russell, you know, his mom is Hispanic Native heritage, and she, while backpacking through Europe, meets this European noble, and that whole thing happens. That's fantastic.
Sure.
You know, I kind of wanted more about what he's talking about families here. You know, I have my own family. I have a complicated history. I was like, are we going to get talks about the stepfather and...
Or the Darkhold?
And the Darkhold or Liza. We didn't, but the seeds are there.
Sure. And again, I like that. I like the recognition that this character has a history, that he's had adventures already. He's done stuff. I don't need to have seen all of it in this one special.
No, no. And I definitely feel like we will see this character again because, as I've pointed out, you know, Werewolf by Night appears in concept art for a ride they are creating for Avengers Campus, which, you know, sees the Avengers battling a multiverse version of King Thanos.
Right.
But, you know, like I was saying, I was being serious when I said I would like this maze on Avengers Campus. Like,
yeah.
Set it up for Halloween, like a arrival to Halloween Horror Nights.
Make it part of Mickey's Not So Scary.
Yes.
Exactly. Theme parks need that seasonal appeal, and you need to build in a little horror.
Yep.
Yep.
And Disney's Halloween theme park stuff has never been quite as good as Universal's, if we're being honest.
No.
And I think having access to they already have, like, the Nightmare Before Christmas stuff they can lean into, and they have, like, their version of the Headless Horseman and some of the villains, and that's what they've been.
And Hocus Pocus.
And Hocus Pocus, yes, which is always part of their stage show. But having access to all these Marvel monsters just seems like an obvious thing.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, you talk about Disney, I feel these characters are probably not part of the Universal deal.
No.
So they can't appear east of the Mississippi River.
Sure. And can you just imagine going to a Disney park and doing a character meet and greet with Man-Thing?
Wow.
And what if a kid was freaked out? They're like, he only hurts you if you're scared.
Don't be afraid, sweetie. No, I mean it. Don't be afraid. Like, my kid was afraid he hugged Goofy at one point, so...
But especially, again, because they, with the MCU version, they've given Man-Thing a personality. You know, he actually has real characterization beyond what is sort of granted to him by an omniscient narrator. Because that's the sort of structure of those Man-Thing comics, is there's always this omniscient narrator that's sort of telling you what Man-Thing would be thinking if he could think.
Yes. You definitely get personality from this Man-Thing.
And I'm okay with that. And the I think contemporary comics have leaned more in that direction.
So, where would we like to see these characters appear again?
So, I feel like there is room for Elsa Bloodstone to run into Blade.
Yeah.
That Monster Hunter meeting Monster Hunter makes sense.
And the monstrous and the immortal seem to have some overlap. I would not be surprised seeing Moon Knight enter the picture somewhere.
Yeah,
sure.
And Trey, you were talking about this while we were not recording, but of course there were plans to include both characters at
There were negotiations about who exactly they would have access to for this special. And Moon Knight was one that came up, and Blade was another that came up. And I think with Moon Knight, it's the question of you know, Oscar Isaac isn't really under an ongoing contract. You know, he didn't sign on for multiple appearances the way most actors do. He's indicated he's open to coming back, but they probably don't want to squander that ask on a 50-minute TV special.
Yeah.
And they have Thunderbolts lined up in the future with Marvel, with, like, all these villains coming together. I wouldn't mind seeing a version of Midnight Suns put all the supernatural characters together.
Although, you know, Man-Thing has shown up in Thunderbolts.
He was their mode of transportation for a while.
So yes.
Alright, we got our credit stinger.
So that's one of the weird things about Man-Thing is eventually it becomes known that he is connected to the Nexus of All Realities, which means he can transport people anywhere in the multiverse, which is useful for transportation.
Of course, you know, right now, they're actually looking for a new director for Blade.
Right. That production has run into some planning issues, yeah.
Yeah, they're supposed to start filming next month.
They've hired a writer to do a new pass on the screenplay.
Because we got Mahershala Ali, so now something has to... We have to balance the scale. Something has to go wrong now.
Right. In fact, they've delayed the movie, I think, because they anticipate it taking longer to get going.
Yeah, apparently Mahershala Ali is not pleased about the process right now.
Or at least he did not like the initial version of the script.
Yes.
It sounds like it's because of that they've brought on new people. And the new writer is good. Like, the writer they've brought on has done several good episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds. Has done... I was telling you about this the other day, James. What else has he done? Bo DeMeo is the writer I was talking about. He's done a couple of episodes of Strange New Worlds. He wrote an episode of Moon Knight, two episodes of The Witcher. He's a writer on the upcoming revival of X-Men the Animated Series. So he's got the right kind of credentials to take over something like Blade.
Okay.
Yeah, it's... I mean, I love Strange New Worlds. So I'm
yeah.
So, you know, they're looking for a director for that.
Right.
After watching this special... I think Marvel maybe has somebody who could take that up.
Giacchino, this is a very well-directed special.
Yes.
Now, granted, there's not a lot to it. It's not a super complicated story.
No.
Or
it's like, Most Dangerous Game with monsters.
Exactly. But...
And there's a bit in the middle when all these hunters, they're in the maze, and they're all just sort of walking around. And you're like, I thought these were master assassin hunters.
They just kind of stumble upon each other.
Yeah.
Which does feel very like 40s horror movie, but you're right. It's not. I feel
like they're going to play Twister. I don't feel like they're going
to. I started to lose my sense of the spatial geometry of like where people were in relation to each other.
Which is kind of one of the reasons I feel like, you know, if they just reveal this maze changes, that would make more sense. But, you know, as far as tone goes. This
absolutely.
Is great. And I do feel that part of that is, I feel this probably had a very small budget.
Absolutely.
And also, from what I remember from the casting news for it, I don't think there was a lot of time put between the start of production on this and its release.
I would buy that, too. Of course, it's not like a theatrically released film, so I don't think there's any kind of sort of publicly announced budget information on it.
Mm-hmm.
But... It does seem like... We started getting rumors about this thing, maybe a year ago?
Yeah.
Like, 2021?
Now, there have been rumors about a Werewolf by Night movie...
Right,
since
right.
before Iron Man came out.
Right.
And, like, you know, there was that famous banner for a Werewolf by Night movie at Cannes that right. year.
And even in the era of... Marvel Television being a separate thing,
mm-hmm.
When that was in its death throes, and there was supposed to be the interconnected set of Hulu shows of Howard the Duck and MODOK and all of those. One of them...
Oh, wait, do you mean Hellstrom?
Well, that was the live-action one. These were the animated ones.
Sorry.
But Kevin's... Because it was all Kevin Smith stuff, right? Like, he was sort of overseeing all of that. He was explicitly told he could not do a Werewolf by Night series for Hulu because there were plans for a movie.
Okay.
And that would have been, what, 2017, 2018?
That's interesting. They let him do MODOK, though.
They did.
And we all, I mean, we're pretty sure MODOK is going to be in Ant-Man 3.
Right, but that MODOK show came out over a year ago and is already canceled.
Yeah, I didn't watch past like the first two episodes.
It desperately wanted to be like Marvel Rick and Morty, but with a little bit of American Dad.
Yeah.
Which is an odd combo.
Which, as we all know, the best Rick and Morty show want to be is, of course, Star Trek Lower Decks.
Yes.
Well, you mentioned that. I was like doing little sketches of characters' faces, and when I was looking into Man-Thing's eyes, trying not to express my inner fear, I noticed like one eye looked sort of like an X on the pupil, and the other looked like one of those asymmetrical asterisks that the Rick and Morty characters always have, because they don't have round irises. It's always like this weird jagged little shape.
Yeah.
Wait, did you say X? X-Men confirmed.
he's a mutant.
Oh god, please.
The Bloodstone is the X gene.
What would have been great is in that close up with the X in his eye, if there had been a slow, creepy version of the X-Men 90s theme. That's the thing in the MCU now, is every time a mutant shows up, it plays the 90s X-Men.
Remember that cartoon you loved?
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
I remember a great deal about it, thank you. The Pavlovian dog response that we all have.
And Disney does not own that theme song. They have to pay royalties every time they use that guitar riff.
Fox Music, right?
Yeah, well, I think so, yeah. Because they didn't, I don't think they bought the music licenses.
Oh, man. Well, you know.
The library.
Ah, that's weird.
I was reading about that. That putting it in Doctor Strange 2 was actually a very expensive thing.
Interesting. Yeah, the original writer of the music, no one told him it was going to be... there's a reaction video online of him reacting to that scene. Like, oh, it's my music. Okay, that was fun. That was nice. Thank you. I don't think he got paid for it.
Well, that scene is absolutely buttressed by... We're shifting into other titles now, but that scene in Doctor Strange 2 is absolutely... Whoa, it's this character. And whoa, who's that? Oh my god, they're all in the same place. What? Xavier? That was supposed to be his last movie, and now he's...
It might be the only time in the history of anything Marvel Comics related that I have ever been excited to see Black Bolt show up. Because I've always been bored by the Inhumans. And yet...
Although we will specify again for those listeners of the show, Ant-Man's a fantastic actor.
Yes.
But, you know, okay, let's talk about that. Let's talk about Doctor Strange 2, because, you know, that was credited as, oh, this is Marvel's first horror film. Werewolf by Night is definitely your gorier.
It is.
Than Doctor Strange 2.
And by design, again, it can get away with a lot because of the black and white.
Yes.
The werewolf is an inherently more violent creature than a superhero.
Yes.
Even a superhero that has possessed the zombie form of one of his variants.
Spoilers for Doctor Strange 2, if you're not saying. Well,
The spoiler gate came down.
Yeah, it almost took Thomas's foot off.
Right.
It blocked out the sun.
We've been clawing at it desperately, like the werewolf at the end of the special.
Oh, guys, there's a door right here.
You just have to throw a tiny quarter-sized bomb at it.
Also, Doctor Strange 2, I fully accept their branding of it as the first, let's say, horror-adjacent Marvel thing.
Yeah.
But it is horror in the mode of Sam Raimi. You know, it is horror like Army of Darkness is horror. It's sort of high concept horror fantasy adventure.
I mean, a rock guitar goes off every time Doctor Strange does something neat. Werewolf by Night, we've got the burning tuba that plays.
Right. And
that's such an interesting choice.
It is.
I can't wait for that cosplay.
And just stylistically, like they're going for different vibes. Like, Doctor Strange 2 uses all of the Raimi tricks. It uses the canted angles and the zooms and the weird POV shots. I'm thinking of course, the stuff where he's zombie strange. But even...
Which in interviews, Raimi had to say the screenwriter had to talk him into doing that.
Oh, I bet. Because
Raimi was like, I don't want to do my greatest hits. And it's like, oh, it's a zombie doing something. And the writer was like, no, it's going to be such a cool scene. And we want to see, you know, your visual take on it. He's like, okay.
But also, Cumberbatch is totally doing a Deadite performance. Mm-hmm. Like the way he's moving his body and contorting his face.
And you would know. having been in the Evil Dead.
Yes, I have done my time as a bit part demon. And,
a small time misfit?
Something like that. But even the earlier scene in that movie where Scarlet Witch is coming through the mirrors, he does some of the POV stuff that he used in the Evil Dead movies, it's using the language of horror, but it's very stylized and it's very action-oriented, whereas here, like, we get it's sort of the werewolf's version of a Marvel Netflix hallway fight. But it's so visceral and violent that blood is literally hitting the screen, hitting the camera, and blocking your view of the action.
Yeah, it's... ooh.
Which is a different feeling. Like, it's a different kind of violence.
And we mentioned during while watching the thing, there is this point where the werewolf would have easily escaped if he hadn't stopped to kill a guard.
Yes.
So, definite...
A guard who himself could have also easily escaped had he not been standing there waiting for his opportunity to throw a stick and miss.
The guard was basically, like, that last guy in the group of goons in, like, a Bruce Lee fight. Like, the one who hangs back to be the last guy who gets hit.
I admire their commitment to maintaining the intelligence level of characters from the original Werewolf by Night comics.
This is true. That speaks to the sort of logic versus instinct thing that the werewolf often lacks.
Yeah. Let's see. Is there anything from the IMDb trivia that I want to...
Do we want to say anything about the attempt to age the film, sort of, as an homage? Y'all were mentioning, like, the noise in the film and the cigar burns.
Yeah.
Which, as someone who spent a whole childhood... bewildered by cigar burns, they are in a movie theater. Sometimes you watch, and right before a scene transitions, a black circle appears
in usually the top right corner.
In the top right corner, and then the scene transitions. And I would always notice them as a kid, and then on VHS and DVD, I would never see them. Yeah. And eventually, I put it together, and I'm like, "What is that supposed to be?" And someone finally told me. So we saw them in this and noticed them. Yes.
What was that someone, Tyler Durden from Fight Club?
Well, so if you don't know, if you are either not aware or maybe young enough that you did not see things projected on film.
Or have not seen Fight Club.
the cigar burns are real change markers. They're a sign to the human being running the projector that it's time to switch from one reel to the next. Having done that job before, I found cigar burns to be stressful.
did you suffer a little bit of PTSD while watching the special?
No, I enjoyed that they were there, even though they're purely aesthetic. This had to have been shot digitally.
Yeah, we talked about that during the special. We speculated, and I did look it up. It was, of course, shot on digital, and they added those stuff later with
right.
the filter.
And they added the cigar burns. They added a filter of sort of... celluloid noise, as though it's an older print of the movie, which I like. It gives it reminded me a little bit of like early 2000s Tarantino stuff, where he and Rodriguez both were really into making the film look older than it was, usually through filters and adding extra noise. Sort of reminded me of that.
Since we're getting close to the actual runtime of the film here with our podcast episode. Back to my thought about this and the Blade film. I would love to see this director work on the Blade film.
Sure.
I would love like a 70s Blade film. 1970, because I thought this was 1970s. But of course I don't think it is actually. I think it's present day, so these characters show up. But you could easily have a Blade film set in the 70s with Blade showing.
There's been talk that Blade may span multiple decades.
I'm for this.
One thing that I read said that at least an early draft of it had scenes set as far back as the 1920s.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the one to differentiate it from the Wesley Snipes ones.
Mm-hmm. And not to bring it all back to Star Trek, but...
Well,
this is
Michael... Sorry, Michael Bailey. It doesn't come back to Superman. It comes back to Star Trek.
Well, this is Michael Giacchino's first feature-length directorial work. He did a short film in 2018 called Monster Challenge... And he directed the animated short trek Ephraim and Dot.
I'm going to find that now and watch it.
which is the one about the tardigrade. from Discovery.
But yeah, I really enjoyed this, and I would like to see more from this director, and I would like to see more of these Marvel special presentations.
Yeah, it's a good format.
Yeah, especially if they keep the little special format, the special presentation thing there.
Oh, we didn't even talk about that. They added an extra thing to the Marvel Studios logo at the beginning of the feature, which felt like an old-fashioned network TV movie of the week intro.
Yes, yes, yes. Which we harvest a lot for the show, so we've seen a lot of those.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, final thoughts, I guess. Thomas, verdict.
As our guest, you go first.
Verdict, very fun, did not overstay its welcome. I'm glad it was not weighed down with references and cameos. And so if it turns into... if it connects to something else later on in some movie, fine. And if it can just be its own thing and start a whole other trend on Disney Plus of like little 1 hour vignettes, that's fine too. So it fits in great with the universe.
It did not overstay welcome at all. Like I said, I would like to see more of it.
Yeah, I would be okay with this being sort of the new version of, in the early days of the MCU, they did the one shots. Mm-hmm. That would usually be like DVD features when the movie would come out on home video. Like, I could see doing these 50-minute things as kind of one-shots to add in, to maybe play with some characters that aren't going to get their own season-long thing, or maybe aren't going to star in a movie that goes to theaters, but you can tell one quick, short story with
them. And of course, one of the common criticisms of the Disney Plus era of Marvel, of the MCU, is that there's a lot of filler.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, say, something, the Disney Plus series. These are the filler episodes. It's so. Like, this is a good way to get around that criticism and still cover a lot of ground in the universe.
Yeah, Werewolf by Night has zero filler.
No.
It's very lean, it's very tight. It is economical, both in terms of using its budget, but also in terms of storytelling.
And I'm going to throw in one more comment about the setting. That initial chamber with all the different hunted monsters, that set up so much lore within the MCU without having to be obligated to any of it. Just to say this stuff exists.
100%.
That's all we're saying.
100%. And even sort of the opening... drawings, those images that were on the walls that just sort of suggest there's this whole secret history of monsters in the Marvel Universe that we've not seen.
Yeah, I appreciate the mystery that this put into place.
Yes, I agree.
You know, it's interesting that Cargill suggested the Moon Pie for us for this special, because like the mint Moon Pies you supplied for us for this... special. It is, of course, dark, black and white on the outside, and seemingly sweet and fluffy, but of course, once you bite into it, surprisingly crunchy.
Yes. Absolutely.
Well said.
So, good stuff. I think we're at consensus. This is definitely a Marvel entertainment worth checking out.
Sorry, we're just talking Moon Pie. Yes, yes.
Okay, so does that wrap it up for us?
I think it does. Thomas, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you on the internet?
You can find my reviews by name on School Library Journal, slj.com. Sometimes I'll write something for Gatecrashers on their website, and you won't find my Kirkus reviews because they don't put our names on them, but they're out there, and... I feel like there's one more venue. Who am I missing? And No Flying, No Tights. I'm their review coordinator, but if I get a bug up my butt, I'll write a review for a comic I'm excited about.
So for all your sexy librarian needs, go see Thomas.
That's right.
Very cool. Thank you for joining us, Thomas. It's been great to have you here. It was fun watching the special with you. It was nice to sort of have another perspective to talk about this singular Marvel event that's unlike any of their other stuff.
Very unlike. And speaking of singular unlike events that... unlike anything else out there, you can find us on Twitter at, I think a lot of us don't, can you tell you, on Twitter at Tomb of Ideas. Our email address, we'd love to hear from you, is tombofideas@gmail.com. And
Facebook.
Oh, yeah, Facebook. Is that still a
thing? That is a thing.
Like,
yeah.
Which one is it? Musk is buying again? Everything. No.
It's all going to become X, the everything app, right?
Oh. Of course, we're on Facebook, facebook.com/tombofideas. And of course, we are loving, proud members of the Cinepunks podcasting family.
That's right. That means you'll find our entire back catalog on cinepunks.com. That's Cinepunks with an X. And in addition to our show, you'll find a lot of other great content, including the flagship Cinepunks podcast, Horror Business, and a whole bunch of other great stuff. So be sure to check out cinepunks.com.
If we're spelling things out, I didn't drop my Twitter handle. It's LibraryTom, LibraryTom.
Awesome.
Very good. So until next time, love listeners, bye-bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to The Tomb of Ideas, a Marvel horror podcast. Until next time, Tombers, Excelsior. Ha 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 ha